Do note that the views expressed in Thinking It Through do not necessarily represent the views of Good News Community Radio. The views expressed in Thinking It Through are meant to serve as a challenge to your beliefs, whatever they may be, and to see how the Christian worldview stands in light of other worldviews.
Welcome back to Thinking It Through, and we continue with a relevant study of the book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature, the kind of literary genre that surfaces when the people of God, the faith community, face trials and tribulations at the hands of secular kingdoms and forces. It is a revelation of the ultimate triumph of God's kingdom over all the kingdoms of man. In spite of the fierceness of the world's empires, they will be subdued by the awesome power of God's reign over the hearts of men. Here's Dr. Gregory Denation, resident minister at Juvenile Mission, in part 4 of Facing the Furnace.
Welcome again, folks, to another Fireside Chat as we discuss the book of Daniel. As you know by now, Daniel forms part of a body of literature called apocalyptic literature. This kind of literature only surfaces in history when the people of God are under duress and stress, when they are being persecuted and they are suffering for their faith. The reason why this literature is produced is because it conveys God's comforting message at a time of persecution in a way that the believers will understand, and it may not necessarily be meaningful to anybody outside the community of faith. Now, we read in the book of Daniel, chapter 1, it says there, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And consequently, as a result of that siege, the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. And that meant they ransacked the place, and they ransacked the temple. They took some of the articles from the temple of God and the treasures that were there. They took it to Babylon, and Nebuchadnezzar put this into the temple of his god, and he put all those treasures into the treasure house of his god. That symbolically indicated that this was the triumph of darkness over light. This was the conquering of the faith of Israel by paganism, and it was humiliating and it was disgraceful. But this was the hardship which the people of God were going to face because of years and years and years of rebellion, years and years of hardening their hearts, that in spite of all the prophets that God sent to warn them that they need to repent and turn back to God or else, they just continued, and finally the patience of God ran out and they were taken into exile. Initially, it was the Assyrians, and then somewhat 200 years later, the Babylonians came. And that was the end of the northern and the southern kingdom. And this meant hardship, dislocation, disorientation. It really meant that the people of God were now going to suffer. When we look at the book of Daniel, we see chapter 1 is written in Hebrew because it's an intro to the rest of the book. It's written in Hebrew because it was directed to the Hebrew people. When you come to chapter 2 to chapter 7, it is written in Aramaic. That's another language. It uses the same alphabet, the same Hebrew letters, like Spanish would use the same English letters that you have in the English alphabet, but it's a different language to English. So Aramaic is a different language to Hebrew, but very close, very close. They use the same letters. And that is because in chapter 2 to chapter 7, God is addressing the pagans, the heathen. That was the language, Aramaic, the language of the unbelievers, the secular society of that time. So God had a word for them, and 6 chapters are dedicated to the Aramaic-speaking peoples. Then when you come to chapter 8 to chapter 12, you have it written in Hebrew again. God was coming back and saying, okay, now we'll go over the same history that we covered in chapter 2 to chapter 7, but now we would see it from the perspective of God's people. So in chapter 2 to chapter 7, you see God at work in history, amongst the pagan nations. God is sovereign amongst the nations, and it shows that He controls the affairs of men. When you come to chapter 8 to chapter 12, you actually go through exactly the same history. It's a repetition of what you have in chapter 2 to chapter 7. But this time, it has information that is particularly related to the people of God as such. So, that means it's a biblical or a Hebrew perspective on events. We saw that chapter 1 we could label recruited to serve, because as we have seen, some men were selected from Judah who were to be educated in the wisdom of Babylon, the training that they would receive there to serve in the king's service. He wanted the best, the most quick-witted, and the best qualified. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these are the names that were given to them by the Babylonians, and Daniel, they qualified. Now, of course, they were going to be fed food from the king's table. And you know, in that culture, before the food is given to the king, it has to be charged with spiritual power. And to do that, rituals and ceremonies are performed, and the food is actually sacrificed and offered to the idols. And Daniel and his friends were aware of this. So it was a problem to them. They had qualms of conscience. They could not participate because that would be going against the core faith which they lived. So Daniel and his friends had to decide what to do now that they were going to be pressurized into compromise. They were now subjected to eating food that was offered to idols. This is the food that came from the king's table. This was an opportunity for them to step up and say, well, we are Hebrews. We serve Yahweh, not the gods of Babylon. We ask you permission. Now, he did it tactfully. He did it wisely. There was no arrogance in his confrontation. Verse 8 of chapter 1, Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. That was the issue. He knew, because it was contaminated, because it was part and parcel of pagan idolatry, it was contaminated by rituals and ceremonies to the pagan gods, he would have to come out of this. Some way he would have to. So it's not as if when it was brought to him, he just closed his mouth and, you know, was cocky and refused to eat of it. It says he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. There was a gentleness, there was a graciousness, there was a godliness, a humility about his approach. And there were good results, because verse 9 says, God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. So the official wasn't hard. His attitude wasn't, look here, you are prisoners, you are exiles, you are now in Babylon, so you will have to do it the way the Babylonians do it. You will have to submit, because remember now, his life was at stake. In those days, you know, it was not the time of human rights, where you could appeal to the constitutional rights that you have. Your life wasn't worth anything. It was there at the whim of the king. So it was with fear and trembling that this thing was approached. But the official told Daniel, I'm afraid. I am frightened. I'm afraid of my lord the king, who had given this instruction, who assigned this food to you and the drink. If you are going to abstain from this, then you are going to look worse than the other young men that we have also recruited. The king would then have my head because of you. In other words, I can receive the death penalty. If I comply with what you want, I'm finished. I'm dead. And of course, if you put yourself in the shoes of the official, it'd be rather that Daniel dies than what he dies. he's going to save his life. But look at the way in which Daniel approached this. He said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over them, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink." Notice that this is not a fast. Daniel didn't say, "I'm going to fast." He was saying, "Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink," because he knew that the vegetables would not be slaughtered and sacrificed, the blood would not be shed for idols and pagan activity, and the drink would be water, clean water. So it's not a fast. It was not saying, "Listen, here are 10 days which we have to institute now what we call the Daniel fast." People are in error. They are creating truth, and we're not entitled to create truth. And he said, "You know, we will be on vegetables and we will drink water. Compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." They were going to eat. They weren't going to fast. It was not a fast. It's never labeled as a fast. This was a stand they had taken against pagan idolatry. It was their testimony, in fact. So verse 15 says, "At the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead." This is after the 10 days. They continued with this. So if people are in error and they want to proclaim this as a fast, bear in mind that it didn't just last for 10 days. That after the 10 days trial period, they were seen to be healthier than the others. The God had no problem with continuing with this diet. So when is our Daniel fast going to stop? After 10 days? That's not what the Bible says. So the people are in error. They are completely wrong. Besides, they're missing the point. If only the folks who institute this kind of a fasting today would be as faithful in abstaining from idolatrous practices that they get so easily contaminated in, like being exposed to some of the films which they are looking at, the computer games that they play, and other forms of idolatry that they indulge in, which is confusing and maybe not so clear that it's idolatry. But that they indulge in while they go on what they call a Daniel fast. This is in error. In fact, maybe it might be more dangerous than what one realizes. So these four young men were now trained in Babylonian culture, Babylonian literature, Babylonian learning. And we read right here at the very beginning, at the end of verse 17, that Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. That is put there so that it would be a kind of an introduction to what will follow in the book of Daniel. So folks, goodbye and God bless until next time.
And that was Dr. Gregory Donation in part 4 of Facing the Furnace, a relevant study of the book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature. Stay tuned as we conclude this week with part 5 tomorrow only on Thinking It Through, same time.
If you have any feedback or queries regarding Thinking It Through, please email it to thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. You can find the live stream, GNCR mission statements, and more at gncr.org.za.